Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell Reed, and our guest this week, Ted Staunton. Each week at this time, we visit with an author or an editor or publisher from our region. We hope to find out a little about their lives, and we ask them what prompts them to do what they do. We give them an opportunity to read some of their work for us. And we're very pleased to have Ted Staunton with us again today for a return visit. Welcome, Ted.
It's nice to be here, Gwen. Thank you for having me.
Ted Staunton has written more than 40 books for young children, middle grade readers, and young adults, and has received prizes for many of them. He was born in Toronto and studied at the University of Toronto. When he went back there to Teachers College in 1981, he wrote a story called Puddle Man for one of his courses, and rather to his surprise, it was published. Puddle Man was a picture book, but he has since written many stories for older children and young adults. Some of the most recent are Who I'm Not, which won him the John Spray Mystery Award, Jump Cut, and Power Chord. Ted speaks and performs at schools and libraries across Canada and frequently takes his banjo with him. He also teaches courses on writing for children at George Brown College and the Halliburton School of the Arts. So, Ted, one of the attractions of your school visits has been your love of music and your guitar and banjo playing. Do you write songs to go with your stories that you read to the young audiences?
Well, usually I don't, actually. I rely on folk songs and tunes that I think kids will have heard before. Mm. Maybe that's partly because I'm often introducing a brand new story. Also because I just like that stuff and I want kids to know songs that, I don't know, I feel they should know.
Oh, cool. So when you were last here, you told us about the new volumes in the Seven series. Have you and your fellow authors written any more in that series?
Well, let's see now. The Seven series currently has 3 volumes by each of the 7 authors. My title in the first series was called Jump Cut, and then the sequels had a title called Coda.
That's right.
And then, maybe the last time I was in, we were speaking about, wait for it, the prequels.
That's right.
And the prequel ended up being called Speed, in which the kids are somewhat younger than in the original books, and they have an adventure with the grandfather character that instigates the whole series. Since then, I have written one more book about my character in that series, a standalone novel called POV, which stands for Point of View. And by now, he's a college student taking film, and he gets hired by a shady character from one of the other 7 books to make a music video for what may be the worst band in the world. I'm not sure. But and it just funny you should ask, because just the other day, in fact, one of the 7 guys called and said, what if we tried a 4th one, but for kids in about grades 2-3? And I don't think that's going to go, because we're all too busy. So currently it stands at 3. Since then, though, I'd love to talk about this, I have moved on to writing another series.
Okay.
With Scholastic Canada, and it's going to be gearing up to come out in the fall.
And that series is?
The series, I'm now told, the series is called Almost Epic. And it's going to be 4 novels by 4 different authors. It'll be middle grade humor. The 4 authors are Kevin Sylvester, who's a stalwart of the CBC and author of many books. Leslie Livingston, who's well known for writing fantasy for young adults, but is also very funny.
Yes.
Richard Scrimger, ex of Coburg.
Yes.
And a longtime buddy of mine. And moi, I get to play too. And in this case, we have written about... Sorry, it's hard to explain this with a straight face, but 4 kids who were born over the same day or so at the hospital in tiny Dimly, Manitoba, they're exposed to a mysterious element called radium, and as they reach puberty, it turns out that each of them, thanks to the radium, has been gifted with, you know, one of the world's, they've each got a different world's most useless superpower.
World's most useless superpower?
Nonetheless, there are bad guys who want to co-opt them and a really, really parsimonious government department that wants to use them for secret missions. And so, you know, mayhem ensues.
That sounds delightful. And you say it's coming out in the fall?
Yeah. This time, when we did the 7s, all the 7 books came out at once.
Right.
In this case, what's going to happen is that Scholastic Books is going to stagger the release. So Kevin's book, fetchingly titled Mucus Mayhem, I won't explain why right now, is coming out in, I believe, September or October. Mine, which is called What Blows Up, will be coming out probably in late November. And Leslie's will follow in January, February. Richard's will bat clean up the following spring.
So that gives you all time to write the next one to come out in May, June. And
This is a consideration. Yeah, time could be tight if things go well.
Yes. Okay, well, let's move backwards a little bit and return to the present. And let me ask you about your newest middle grade novel, Bounced.
Ah, yes. Thank you. Yeah, Bounced is also published by Scholastic. It's a standalone. It's sort of, I hope, a comedic mystery. I frequently get ideas from real life things. And I drew it from two or three things. One was an article I read about an extremely odd bank robber in Texas. And I sort of filed that away because I thought, you know, I can use this character somehow, but it's not going to be the main character in a book. And then, I don't know if you remember, two or three years ago, perhaps three or four, somebody dumped an alligator in High Park in Toronto. I gather it had gotten too big to be a pet or too big for the bathtub or something, and somebody took it down to a pond there, plopped it in, someone walking their dog did a double take and thought, that's an alligator. And there was quite a rigmarole to get it out. Eventually, a fellow from a reptile zoo north of Toronto came down, and he waded into this pond, and he grabbed this alligator, I met the alligator later. It was about 4 feet long. So we're not talking a monstrous reptile. But the thing is, this fellow waded into the pond, and he grabbed it with his bare hands. I had the opportunity to meet him as well. He was a fascinating man, very generous with his time. Anyway, I wanted to put that in a book too. And I was talking with some folks and they showed me when I was a kid, we would have called them a super ball. I believe kids now call them bouncy balls. Those little tiny hearts, they look like India rubber, but they're in fact some kind of synthetic that makes them incredibly, you know, bouncy and responsive. Anyway, I used that to tie together a plot about three kids who set out to get some money for their families by claiming the reward for capturing a bank robber. And really, the bouncing ball and much of what they do, they have no idea how to catch a bank robber, but it's an excuse to let them meet some odd characters, including the alligator
crocodile
guy, yeah, and eventually the bank robber. It was a lot of fun to write. I was just told a couple of weeks ago that it's been shortlisted for the Manitoba Young Readers Association Award for this coming school year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I was very pleased to hear it.
Well, on that note, how about you read some for us from Bounced?
Sure. Okay, I'll read you a little bit. This is in about the first third of the book, and our narrator is a kid named Duncan Fortune. Duncan has two close pals, a girl nicknamed Cece and his buddy Zal. Cece is kind of outdoorsy. Zal has told the world that he wants to be either a professional magician or a major league shortstop. He thinks it's all about the hands. They have been down through this park and been present when this alligator was spotted, and they have been corralled by this fellow who shows up on the scene and says, "I can get that gator. You leave this problem to me. And you kids, come on down here tomorrow afternoon, and I want you to watch this too. This is science in the making. This is better than school." So the kids ditch school. There's instructions on how to do that in the book. And and they find themselves down at the park the next day, where it turns out that this fellow just doesn't want them just to watch. He's going to use them as helpers.
Oh, lovely.
Yes. So TV cameras are rolling, and there's a crowd watching, and this slightly eccentric guy named Marty Raymond, in his khaki safari gear and bushman's hat, explains what they're to do. So Zal and Cece are to paddle a little inflatable dinghy out very quietly on this pond. Cece's to paddle. Zal is to capture the whole thing on his cell phone so that Marty can have good YouTube footage. Duncan, as it turns out, is going to be Marty's net man. And when Duncan doesn't know what that is, Marty gives him a long fish landing net and says, "You go over there. Watch for my signal." He explains that an alligator, there's only two places an alligator can't see. One is, of course, behind its head, and the other is directly in front of its snout because its eyes are set to the side. Lucky Duncan gets to wade into the pond right in front of the alligator. I'll just read you a little bit of what happens. I moved to my spot. Marty Raymond moved to his and stepped into Green Pond. He moved so carefully the water barely rippled. When he got waist deep, he waved to Zal and Cece. They gently set the dinghy on the water. They climbed in, and they quietly pushed off. It was so still, for a moment the only sound you could hear was the single dip of Cece's paddle. Out on the road, a car rolled by. Marty Raymond waved to me. I took a deep breath and stepped in. Water flooded my sneakers. I edged forward. The bottom sucked at my feet. The water was so murky I couldn't see anything by the time my knees were wet. Weeds, or something, clutched at my bare legs. I wished I'd worn jeans. I tried not to think about what might be down there and concentrated on not making ripples. The pond got deeper, faster than I expected. At waist deep, I slipped the net and the pole into the water just ahead of me, under the surface, the way Marty Raymond had said. The bumps of the gator's eyes and snout sat on the green scum like gun sights, maybe 20 yards away. I was right on target. I looked at Marty Raymond. He nodded. The gator hadn't moved. We eased in farther. I felt my life jacket begin to bob. Marty Raymond was chest deep in that blanket of scum now, about 30 feet back of the gator. I was at the edge of the stuff. It was so thick you couldn't see the net and pole just under the surface, but I could feel the bottom dropping off steeply, and I couldn't go further without the life jacket floating me off my feet. I stopped. I stared hard at those dark little bumps. They were so still, I wondered if the caiman was really there. It had to be there. Because if it wasn't there, where was it? That was a thought I didn't need. I clutched the pole tighter. Then Marty Raymond sank slowly, arms stretched in front of him until only his head seemed to bob on the surface, a hat-wearing balloon. There was no sound. His head drifted closer and closer. 10 feet back, the gator didn't move. 9 feet, 8 feet. I thought, teeth like razors. 6 feet. 5, 4.
And who got
I'm not telling. But when I'm at schools, often I'll tell students that, and because it's a true fact, one of the things you do when you write a story, in the middle of the story, once you set up a problem, you never solve the problem, you make it worse. So I'll read that to kids and say, make it worse for me. What could happen right now to make it worse? Got to tell you, the best answer I ever got from a student, and I so wish I had thought of this, Gwen, I so wish I thought of it, was a kid said, that thwop. She said, that was the sound of the gator biting into the inflatable boat.
Oh, yes. Like the two of them were filming
it.
Yeah,
totally. And I didn't write that. So.
Anyway. Oh, so we know that doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't happen. So I guess we're just saying the book could have been better, but I still kind of like it the way it is.
Well, thanks, Ted. Ted Staunton has been reading from his book, Bounced, and we'll take a short break now and get back with him in a few minutes.